Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everybody to Spotlight. Spotlight is a program that we have every Saturday at 1:30 Eastern Time. And all we do is we interview one of our members.
Oh, tab. Stop button.
My name is Terry in Corning, New York. And our victim this week is Becky Buckner in Durham, North Carolina. And how do you, Becky, could you tell us a little bit about, let's start off with where you're living and maybe where you were born.
Thank you, Terry. Glad to be here. And please excuse the nervousness. It's going to get better. I live in Durham, North Carolina right now. I have always been a North Carolinian. Was born and raised in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, which is in the western part of North Carolina. And I went to school there and lived there until I was about 18 years old.
Okay, real good, Becky. Were you born blind? Did you have any sight at all from birth?
I have retinitis pigmentosa, RP, and so when I was young, I had some sight, had a whole lot more than I have now. I only have a little bit of light perception now, and as everybody knows about RP, it's a very gradual deterioration. It was in my case. They knew when I was 5 years old that I had RP. I have a older sister and brother. My brother's 10 years older and my sister's 2 years older. We all three have RP. It's very strange because nowhere on either side of our family, my mother or my father's side, is there any RP found. And just sort of seemed to crop up in this family, in this generation. So, I forgot now the question, Terry.
Well, you pretty much covered. I was wondering if you had sight when you were born and how you lost it.
Yeah, so I did have sight when I was a child. Some, I remember what a lot of things look like. Very fortunate. I really had enough sight to travel up until I was into my early 20s, travel without assistance and without a cane. I went to public school. In elementary school, I was in a sight-saving class, it was referred to. It was in the public school. And in that school, in that class, we had large print books, and we had a special designed blackboard that didn't glare and blah, blah, blah. And that went through the seventh grade. And it was, you know, one teacher with children from grades 1 through 7 in that classroom. And there's usually never more than about 14 kids in that class.
Oh, kind of a small class then. Okay, when you got up into high school, how did you continue in the public school system, and how did the other students treat you if you did? Did they treat you okay, or did you have a problem?
Well, after I finished the seventh grade, you were sort of in a dilemma. You either had to have enough vision to go on to regular school, you know, regular public school, or you had to go to the school for the blind. Well, in my brother's case, and our vision, all three of our visions was pretty much along the same path. So I sort of knew what to expect because my brother was 10 years older. My parents sent him to the school for the blind in Raleigh. But I went on to regular public school in the eighth grade and on into high school. I did okay, because I really didn't have that much trouble. I could still read the regular print pretty well, till I started getting into the 9th and 10th grade, and it got to be real difficult to read regular size textbooks. So in my 10th, or actually in my 11th and 12th grade, I had to have a reader to finish up my high school in public school. As to how the other kids treated me, I was sort of actually introverted then, so I wasn't quite as outgoing as I am now. But I had friends, and they all treated me the same, as pretty much as anybody else. I had a couple of real close friends, and in fact, those two girlfriends ended up being my readers the last 2 years I was in high school. You know, I can't really complain. I feel like I was pretty much treated like everybody else. Probably a lot of them didn't even know until those last 2 years that I had a visual problem. And by then, you know, I had to be sitting up real close. Actually, the blackboard, I got to where I couldn't see the blackboard, and the teachers would give me, you know, written material that was on the blackboard. They'd write it on the paper for me.
Oh, okay. What types of things did you do on weekends and, you know, days you weren't in school? Did you find things to keep yourself amused? And I imagine you had quite a few friends.
Well, back in those days, you sort of entertained yourself. I had some close girlfriends, and we sort of would spend night with each other and play, you know, records and sort of like a slumber party kind of thing. My family was very active in our church, and a lot of our activities revolved around what was going on at the church. And our family, our extended family, was close by. And so, you know, you visited aunts and uncles, and you visited cousins, and that sort of thing. And when I was a kid, you know, I had a lot of fun because it was, you know, I could see some then. And I was pretty much a tomboy because most of the people that were in my neighborhood were little boys. And my sister, she liked to play with baby dolls, and she stayed inside a lot. And I loved to play outside, so I you know, would play outside with the boys in the neighborhood, and I got real good at climbing trees and playing cowboys, and so I, you know, I had a lot of fun when I was a kid. But as I got older and into high school, I was losing significant vision by then, and it wasn't quite as much fun. It was a little more of an adjustment to make then.
Yeah, sounds like you were pretty rowdy as a teenager, very youngster. Yeah, okay. All right, well, tell us a little bit about what happened after you graduated high school, and what did you do about further continuing your training back at you going to college?
No, actually, I didn't go to college. When I was in high school, toward the end of high school, I talked to a counselor. This was the counselor for the blind. And he sort of talked like, you know, the only thing you can go to college for is to be a social worker. and I thought, well, I don't want to be a social worker, especially if most of them are like you. That's just not, doesn't appeal to me. So I decided that medical transcription might be a good field to go into, and it would be something that I could continue to do as I continued to lose sight. And in fact, you know, when I had no sight, I could still do that job. And so that's what I decided to go into. When I graduated from high school in 1962, I went to the rehab center for the blind, which at that time was in Butner, just outside of Raleigh. And I was there for about 6 months, learned some Braille, which I promptly forgot because I didn't really use it then. I could still read print with a magnifying glass. But had a ball there. That was a fun 6 months. I learned mobility and demands of daily living, the whole thing. And then the social thing, it was just lots of kids or people there my same age. And it was really the first time I'd ever been away from home, you know, and we just had a really good time. Well, then after 6 months there was a training, a medical transcription training program over at Duke University Medical Center that the Commission for the Blind had set up, and it had been ongoing for a few years. And so in January of 63, they had a vacancy come open, and even though usually you stayed at the rehab center for 11 months, because they had this opening, they let me go ahead and go into that slot because they knew that's what I wanted to go into. So I went into medical transcription training at Duke in 63, January 63. And it was sort of really almost like on-the-job training because we actually did transcription for the medical outpatient clinic there. And the supervisor of us who proofread all of our work would go to other departments and divisions and get dictation for us so that we would have, you know, exposure in other fields of medicine. And I enjoyed that. And we lived at the YWCA, and that was a lot of fun too. So that was for about a year. That's my extended education.
Oh, very good. I know a lot back in those days they didn't have as much adaptive as equipment as they do now as far as computers and so on. Did you do most of yours by typing?
Yes, electric typewriter. And you had to be a pretty darn good typist because it was really difficult to make corrections. We had that, correct-a-type stuff that you could use if you had a little vision. But for the most part, you better just have it typed right. And when Ms. Long had to correct it, she would make corrections. But we used an electric typewriter to begin with, and for quite a few years that's what I used with of course the dictaphone with the tapes with the dictation on it, and you just listened in your ears and out your fingers it went.
Yeah, okay, so I take it somewhere along Fathom, you met your husband. Can you tell us a little bit about that, or was it later on in years where you met Carl?
No, I met Carl at the rehab center. He was also there. And when I left there, he stayed on for the 11 months, and then he went to another place to do upholstery training, and I went to Durham. Well, he kept coming to Durham, and we just, you know, we would go out and we had a lot of fun, and that was in, well, I, that, let's see. Did I tell you I got a job after that training? I did get a job, an offer on a job in 64 there at Duke in the Department of Psychiatry. And the lady that had the job before me was also blind, and she was getting married and moved to Tennessee. So she told the people up there, she said, I'd really like to see another blind person get this job. So they came down to the medical transcription training pool and asked Ms. Long if anyone was ready to finish the program that might be willing to or interested in staying in that area. And just so happened that I was approaching that year mark, and so they talked to me and asked me if I'd like to, you know, stay in the area. And this was in 64. And I said, yeah, I think so. I was thinking, now, this is where I make my stand of independence. Don't go back to Winston-Salem and live with Mom and Dad. I'll stay here. I'll take this job, and I'll stay here. So that's what I did. I took that job in the Department of Psychiatry. That's the job that I kept for 34 years full-time. And, in fact, I'm actually still working within that department part-time. But Carl and I were dating during that time, and after the first year that I got the job, he kept coming back and forth from Rocky Mount to Durham. And then in 65, we got married, 1965, and he came to Durham, and he tried to get an upholstery training, upholstery job there. But, and he could do it really well, but he couldn't do it really fast. And unfortunately, the place that he went to said, his work was good, but they need somebody that could do it faster. So, he ended up going down to, the Lions Club Industries for the Blind and, worked down there for about the first 5 years we were married. And we'd both decided that Durham's where we would stay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that sounds good. I believe you have, is it one son? Can you tell us maybe when he was born, how old he is, and a little bit about him there?
We do have one son. He is now 31 years old. That makes me feel old. But we were married for 6 years before we had Stephen, and that was because we really were thinking, no, we won't have children, because I was very concerned about the RP. Meanwhile, my brother and his wife had two children, and they were fine. And my sister had a daughter, and she was fine as far as the RP was concerned. And so we thought, well, maybe we'll be okay to have children. So we decided to have Stephen, and he is fine, no RP. And we stopped at one because we decided we didn't want to stretch our luck, but I was sort of wishing now I'd had two. He is in the Army, and he's been in the Army for almost 12 years in June, and he's now stationed in Georgia.
Oh, that's great. That's great. All right. Of course, we know you're into computers now. Just when did the computers end your life? And, of course, you've came a long way, and are you now using, I know you're working part-time, you might want to tell us that you're, I guess, retired and working part-time. I guess you're probably using computers in your work now rather than typewriters.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to think earlier about exactly when we started using computers at work. I remember very vividly my people around me were talking about, oh, so-and-so is getting a computer, and so-and-so is, this one's getting a computer. And my supervisor said to me one day, what will you do when everybody goes to computers? Thinking, of course, that, this was going to be a real problem for me. Well, I knew, I had a friend who also worked at Duke. There were three blind girls that worked at Duke in different departments. And I knew that one of them had already gotten her computer, and she had gotten training on it, so I knew it could be done. So I said to my supervisor, I said, well, I can learn how to use a computer. I said, there are blind people using computers, and so that means I can learn how to use it too. And that was probably in the 80s sometime. I'm not sure exactly when that happened. But anyway, they got the computer, and I went to the rehab center back in Raleigh, spent a week there learning how to use the computer with WordPerfect as the word processing program. And so from there, of course, we stayed on with that a right good while. And actually, before, just to backtrack as far as technology is concerned, I did use an Opticom on my typewriter when the Opticoms came out. I don't know if everybody's familiar with that. It's a device that you use tactilely, and you can feel the letters as they move under the Opticom, which is perched up on top of my typewriter. It's really, really neat. But I was glad to get this computer. Man, was that an improvement. And, you know, you could make corrections so much easier. There's no more correct to type and try. Oh, it was, you know, that was a hassle. The computer, when it came out, it was just an answer to a prayer as far as how much better quality I think our transcription was and how much easier it was to do.
Oh, I bet it was, definitely. Now, I guess you're retired now and you work part-time?
Yeah, I retired in December 31st of 98 from full-time. I was beginning to have some serious symptoms of carpal tunnel. And I just decided that rather than wait until I really have serious problems, I was just going to go ahead and retire. I had enough years of service in that I could retire on just service. And but I really, you know, I sort of wanted to not stay at home all the time and you know, get lazy and fat. Well, I got fat anyway. But anyway, so I said I'll work part-time, and I was working at first 16 hours a week, and then things started getting sort of crunchy. People were downsizing departments and cutting here and cutting there, and the next thing I knew, I was working 8 hours a week, which is not bad, you know. 2 4-hour mornings a week is just really a great work schedule.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And it kind of breaks up the monotony. Okay, now, when did you first come involved with For the People? And I know you play a great part on the site and do a lot of volunteering and so on. Tell us a little bit about that, Becky.
Well, you know, when I retired, about the only thing I had done on a computer was the word processing. And, of course, that's what we were trained for. We really did not get a general course on computers, just how to do your job is what you were taught. And I wanted to try to learn a little bit more about how you do this Internet thing, you know. And at some state conventions I'd been to, they had talked about ACB radio. So one day I was sitting in here, and I thought I'm going to see if I can get on the Internet and go to ACB radio. So I typed in, you know, ACB radio, and clicked on there, and there was a program or an interview going on, and Jonathan was interviewing Jennifer, and she was talking about For the People. And I thought, that sounds interesting. Well, at the time, I only had a single channel sound card. So that made it a little difficult. Well, of course, I immediately had to get a multi-channel sound card. But that's what I found for the people. And that is really where I have learned the most about my computer. As everybody knows, you know, all the techie folks here are just so great to help you in the classes that we have here. I have learned so much about my computer, and I really owe it all to For the People and the people on For the People.
Well, you've done a lot on For the People to help other people, and also done a lot of volunteering. You're producer, or you came to get Spotlight together and do the scheduling and all that, and fill us in on a little bit of that, Becky.
Well, the Spotlight is just the fun program, and it's been a lot of fun to do. For those of you who haven't been up to the Galaxy of Stars, of course, there are archives of many of the Spotlight programs up there, and it enables you to get to know a lot more people and find out a lot more about them. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And, of course, we have people like Terry, who does such a great job of interviewing, and Steve Pallett, and now Steve Shepard, and Mar, of course. It's a great group of people to work with.
Well, I don't know about me. I'm kind of nervous today, too, and this is the first one I've done, so I see I'm still conscious anyway, so that's good. Okay, well, we'll like to thank you, Becky, for all the work you've done on For the People. You've done a great job. I know you've done some work for Jen, some typing and what have you, and been on a lot of the committees and so on. So we'd like to thank you for everything you've done. And I think from here we'll open it to the floor for any questions for Becky.
And I want to thank Becky, besides all the committee work she's done and production of Spotlight. She's one of our administrators, and she's always a wonderful ear, puts a lot of time and thought and feedback she gives me and the other administrators. She's a very important part of For the People, and in lots of times in ways it doesn't show. So thank you for everything, Becky.
Thank you, Jen, for bringing us For the People. It's meant a lot to the people.
Well, Becky, which one? I'm up to 45 now. No, I'm not going to do that to you, Becky. Oh, I want to thank you for the great review you've done, though, and all the help you've been to me and anybody that ever needs any help. You're great person with everybody on here, I think. I don't know of anybody you've ever crossed or made angry or anything. You've just been fantastic doing what Becky does, playing that fine music and socializing with people. Thank you, dear.
Oh, thank you, Hank. You did good, Hank. I appreciate that, and I do it because I enjoy it, and I have had I don't know what I've done. I would have done in retirement if it hadn't been for my computer and For the People.
And I always enjoy talking to Becky. She always seems to be so cheerful. I never hear her in a bad mood. How do you do it, Becky?
You see, I don't come on when I'm in a bad mood.
Now, I remember once upon a time when you got a compact computer.
Oh, boy, I was brokenhearted with that.
Becky, you mentioned your son was in the Army for over 12 years. I hope he's planning on making it a career.
Yes, I'm afraid he is, much to his mother's chagrin, but he loves it. He, of course, as I tell him, nobody's been shooting at him yet, but he likes it, and I guess as long as he's happy, that's what's important.
Yeah, hello, Becky, and thank you for everything you do, Becky. There's just one question I wanted to ask about Carl doing his upholstery. Did he end up still doing upholstery, Becky?
Not as a job. He does it as a hobby, or does it, you know, when we need something like that done. He left that, and like I say, worked at the Industries for the Blind in their mattress department for 5 years. Then he found a job over at the university in the Department of Botany in the division of phytotron, which is where they do research on plants and agricultural kind of stuff, and he helped in the maintenance of those buildings. He didn't actually do, of course, the research stuff, but he was in the maintenance of those buildings, greenhouses and such.
And you can't find a nicer guy. He's really, really a sweetheart, Becky.
Yeah, he definitely is one of my better decisions. We've been married for 37 years. I'm almost up there with Jim and Marcia. In fact, let's see. I think we got married a week before Jim and Marcia.
Maybe we need an interview on Carl. You know, like Terry was saying, what's the other side of Becky?
It would be a lot more interesting because he does a lot more different things than me. See, I'm strictly a computer person and a people person.
You did just fine, Becky.
I have a question for you, Becky. I was really struck when you said that you decided to take the job in Durham and take a step, you know, a giant step for it, really, with independence, not going back home to Mom and Daddy. Where did you stay at that time? Were you on your own? Did you have a roommate? How did you handle that? Because that really was a big step for any young girl, especially a visually impaired one, I think.
Well, when I went to Durham for my medical transcription training, the girls that were in that, and there was usually four of us in training at one time, we lived at the YWCA, and I continued to stay there even after I got my job. It was a great place to stay, and the house mother there was just super nice, especially to us visually impaired girls. If we got a little puny or something, she would bring us up soup, and she was just so good to us. And so I stayed there until I got married.
And were your parents supportive about you taking the job, or did they want you to come back home and look for something closer to home?
Well, they were supportive. They did. I think they were a little disappointed that I didn't come back home, but they were supportive, and they knew, you know, I was going to be coming home pretty frequently, and so if they were really upset with me, they pretty much kept it to themselves, because they never talked against it.
Becky, I was just wondering, I missed about 15 minutes, 20 minutes of it, and you might have covered this, but I don't know. How do you get about as Becky with a cane, or a Becky with a guide dog, or if you've had dogs, how many have you had?
No, I've never had a guide dog. I've always used the cane. Back when we first got married, and I would take the and Carl was working at Lanza, I would take the bus to work, which came right. You know, we were right on the direct route going to Duke, so I didn't even have to transfer. I just got on the bus and went to Duke and came right back. And back then, of course, I could, you know, I still had some pretty good travel vision. But I've always been a cane user and pretty well could get around Duke Hospital. But the calls, when I first went there for the first few years, I could see where sort of where things were. And got sort of a mental picture of the place. And by the time I had pretty much lost most of my sight, I knew my way around real well.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you again, Becky, for coming on Spotlight today and all your help with Spotlight. And also we'd like to thank all the other folks that's helped out today that's doing our recording going in for Dennis today. And everybody's welcome to stick around and ask Becky any other questions. Thanks again, and please join us again next week at 1:30 Eastern Time.
Becky, I have a quick question. By the way, it was a great interview. I know you that you have one son, and you said you work full time. Did you stay home part of the time when your son was a baby? Did you daycare him? How did you handle that?
I was only maternity leave was 6 weeks back then, and that's how much time I was out with him. And when I went back to work, of course, we had the struggle, as most mothers do, of daycare. And we tried to begin with to find someone who would come to the house and keep him. And that was very difficult to do, to find. And so we ended up putting him in a daycare center. And so, no, I didn't get to stay out with him nearly as long as I would like to have.
Becky, I'd like to say I missed the very beginning of this interview, but you did a wonderful, wonderful job, both you and Jerry. Excellent.
Thank you, Anita. I appreciate that. And next Saturday, Steve Pallett will be interviewing our Singapore friends, Jaffer and Y.E.
Jerry, you did great. You did too, Becky. I could tell you were nervous at the beginning. Wonderful interview, though. And thank you again. Thanks, Mark, for saving the recording day.
I was very nervous.
So, Becky, you say you never went to college then?
That's right, Dennis.
But, Becky, you notice where she works, the psychiatric department.
Yeah, I need help real bad, real bad.
You're telling me? Hi, Dennis.
Hey, Dennis, maybe I can find some group rates for all of us.
Hey, at least I admit that I need help real bad. I mean, hey, I'm willing to put my foot on the first step.
Hey, Becky and Terry, well done, the pair of you. That was really good.
Boy, coming from Mr. Pallett, that's high praise.
Thanks, Steve. I was really nervous, and I know I was jumping around too much.
I was, too. I think it's something I'd go back to.
Yeah, me, too. Maybe we should try it again. Just scratch this one. Try it again, Terry.
Well, it appeared to come over the airwaves just great. I could tell Becky was nervous at the beginning, but it was a terrific interview. Thank you both.
Yeah, I start to say, Martin, Becky never says no to anything except being interviewed. It took a lot to get this gal in this room.
Well, it sure did. And we did a practice one, just goofing off here one day. I was interviewing Becky and Amita and Hallie and stuff, just goofing off. And that's how this all got started. And she said she would do it if I'd interview her.
Terry, your wife needs to clean up your desk. Get that paper away from you. You're just letting them fingers do too much walking on that paper.
I thought it turned out real good. I enjoyed it, too.